is your home, your family, your life.
Welcome to Stray Living.
With the Houseman Harrogate, the expert property handyman, maintenance and refurbishment service.
Welcome, welcome to Stray Living, sponsored by Prosecco. with the Houseman Harrogate.
Oh, yes.
Okay, Houseman. So it's going to be a great show. We've got loads of interesting stuff. So what have you got for us, Sally, in the gardening?
Well, a bit of inspiration from Harlow Carr the other day. We're talking about Iris, not Dame Jean Iris Murdoch. OBE, DBE, no less. OBE, DBE, not sure. Anyway, but Iris, Harlow Carr, gorgeous. So a little bit about Iris, some of your gardening jobs to do at the weekend, and a bit more Prosecco.
Okay. Also on tonight's programme, we're talking rabbits and rabbit care. And there's a story about this with Bob, legend from the vet hospital. And we meet Brian, my new best friend, Brian from Melia Powell Funeral Care in Skipton and Keighley. He's going to be on the programme tonight as well.
Stray Living with the Houseman Harrogate. Need to clear that home to-do list? Get the house sorted in no time.
We're going to do rabbit care with Bob from the vet hospital. And I just need to tell you that there's a bit of a connection here, because Sally was once put in charge of looking after Rebecca, her boss's rabbit. And what happened to Mr. Rabbit?
It didn't end well, Nick. It ended.
It ended. Rabbit, can you imagine? You're asked to look after
it's
your
horrendous.
Boss, your friend's pet rabbit, and the rabbit dies on your watch. What did the rabbit die of?
Oh, I don't know, but Bob knows. He was checked out. Bob, the vet hospital were amazing. I don't know. I just thought maybe it was a bit hungry, so I tried to give it a breadstick, and it was having none of it.
And then you poked it. Poked the rabbit with the breadstick,
It was confirmed, but it was a bonding experience for myself and John Towler, because he kind of helped me remove the rabbit in a very dignified RIP. Please don't anybody report us way.
No, absolutely. So. And Sally still works here.
How that happened.
You can murder the boss's rabbit and still work here. It's interesting. No, she didn't murder it. That's not true. Okay, so we've got rabbit care coming up with Bob from the vet hospital, but it's Sally's gardening tips next.
Get into the garden with Stray FM.
Okay, so it is the Stray Living Show. Nick Hancock and Sally, our gardening guru. What you got for us this week in the garden?
Boom, boom, boom. Oh, well, I went to Harlow Carr the other week, and the little dwarf iris look amazing. So I have got some gardening jobs, but I thought I'd just touch on iris. Do you know what an iris? This is, I always worry at this
Obviously
point.
Obviously not.
I know, we've done a year and still I look thinking optimistically you might just know what this flower
looks
like.
I'm here to play the part of a good-looking fool. You know that, Sally.
Yeah. Anyway.
Okay.
So, have you heard of Van Gogh?
Yes.
Right, so he painted iris.
Yes, picture. I do know that. Yes, okay.
So he painted them, so he was quite impressed.
It's very Radio 4, this.
I know. I have aspirations, Nick, I'm just saying. what with that and the nomination? So Vincent Van Gogh painted them, and he painted them, and they were beautiful. Here's a weird thing, because it's a bit late. You wouldn't plant bulbs for iris now. They're coming up now, and they look really beautiful, and they've got really sharp stems and little blue. They don't last that long, but they are stunning, and you can get different sizes and varieties. You should have put your bulbs in at the back end of summer last year. However, you could go and buy them in pots at your local garden centre and put them into your own planters to make them look really attractive. I like gardening. I also like to look at the weird facts behind gardening.
Okay.
So here's a really random one for you. The juice squeezed from the plant, because that's just what you'd do, isn't it, if you had an iris plant on the table. you can use that juice to improve the condition of your skin. The root can be used for purification of the body because it contains substances with, this is really rank actually, pass the Prosecco, with laxatives, diuretics and emetics, which induce vomiting properties.
I need a bit more.
Was
when you mentioned impurity, it reminded me that your glass was empty.
Stock up on your toxins.
At Harlow Carr, if we're going this weekend then.
They're just gorgeous.
Impressive.
Underneath the dogwood. Depending on the colour of the flower, it can signify different things. So purple is wisdom, white is purity. We did that a few weeks back. And in the Greek language, iris means rainbow. But I think they are so beautiful, particularly if you like blue in your garden. If you've got a colour scheme to have blue, they just look striking, and when the way they open up from nothing and then sort of just open up with the sunshine and the warm to the most spectacular creation that nature's just put there. It's just gorgeous. Spectacular. It's the Prosecco. It's just absolutely gorgeous.
Okay, well,
do you want a few jobs for the weekend?
Yeah.
Well, last week I told you to have a sit down, but now it's a bit warmer, so you need to stand back up, put on the gardening gloves, pick up the fork and get yourself outside and dig the soil over, put a layer of compost on, just get it ready, give it some food, just get it ready for all the stuff it's going to have to do in the forthcoming months, because it needs food, otherwise it's going to have no energy. If you need to move deciduous trees, top news story this morning, to help with flood prevention, if you plant more trees, because the trees take
soak
on
the water.
And what I didn't understand is if the trees fall over, they can become a natural barrier for rivers, so they can actually hold back.
When you think about it, it makes sense.
It does, anyway. Yeah. So, but if you are needing to move deciduous trees or shrubs, now's the time to do it, providing the soil's not frozen or too waterlogged. So just be careful. But give the food, the soil lots and lots of food. Feed your trees, the shrubs, the hedges, slow-release fertiliser rather than just all in one go. That's a bit like eating a banana, because you can keep going for longer rather than a big sugar hit with a Mars bar. Just saying. Plant your summer flowering bulbs, gladiolized lilies.
Do you know what, Sally? You've been quite good value, so you can have the rest of... You can have 10 minutes off.
Thanks.
The Vet Hospital on Stray Living.
We're going to be looking, as it's around Easter now, bunny rabbits.
Indeed, yes. Very, very popular pets.
And we're not talking about chocolate ones, obviously. We're talking about actual bunny rabbits. It's something that I would imagine is a real favourite with younger children in families, thinking, I know, let's have a bunny rabbit.
Often that's the case. It is often used as a starter pet, really, and then kids then grow on a little bit and then move on to having cats and dogs. And usually often it's the parents that actually then decide, actually, yeah, we can cope with this. We can look after rabbits, and let's move on and look at other pets as well. But we have a lot of owners of rabbits and within the practice, and a lot of them are actually kept as house bunnies, not just the outside rabbits.
Which is really interesting, because I just assume, never having owned a rabbit, that they just have to be outside all the time.
Well, the old idea of having rabbits in hutches, thankfully, is starting to fade away. Hutches really aren't a great environment for rabbits, where they're kept in a closed, small space right the way through. If they are outside, they do need space to roam, and obviously they need to make sure they don't burrow out, and so having the wire fencing buried underneath the grass and things like this. And that's, I think, in many ways the best environment for rabbits to have, because they get a chance to eat grass and so on. But with a lot of our clients living in flats in Harrogate, a lot of them now will take the rabbits inside, and they live inside quite happily. You can actually house train rabbits, which is great. It means they're very, very tidy and clean. They can have problems stripping the wallpaper off, though, because they enjoy chewing. So you do need to be a little bit careful with them.
Where did that rabbit hutch come from then, really? Why did that originally come to fruition that, I know, let's stick rabbits in hutches?
Bluntly, it was for food. A lot of it started during the times of the war, and also when food was very in short supply. And rabbits are a bountiful source of protein. So in those terms, that's where that started from. But the way that they're housed for food production, and thankfully, even in food production sites where rabbits are used for that, that's changed as well. In the same way as we don't have battery hens or try and avoid having battery hens, we've moved on from that side as well.
So as you've mentioned, Bob, about the fact that you can now have a rabbit in your house as a house pet, what kind of things are you having to think about the environment there? Because obviously there will be things that they might chew, or there may be things that might be very deadly to them.
The biggest problem really is cables, electric cables, and rabbits seem to have a passion for eating plastic, and the plastic coating of electric cables is a delicacy as far as they're concerned. So that's the major thing we have to be careful of. It's important to try and give them access to sunlight. Sunlight is important in terms of vitamin D and the metabolism. But yeah, they do make good house pets. They do indeed.
Which is really interesting as well. I can imagine some people may even try and buy a lead for their rabbit. I mean, would you advise against that? You've seen it with cats and with dogs.
Certainly. I mean, we have clients that do bring them. They take the rabbits out for walks and little harnesses, and it can work very, very well indeed. And making sure they have exercise, is certainly one of the things that we can do to help look after our rabbits.
That sort of alludes to healthcare. So I would imagine, as with any pet, you have to be really on top of their healthcare. What kind of things do we need to be considering?
Absolutely. I mean, again, our motto in the vet hospital is certainly looking always at prevention. And vaccinations are key to that. There are some very nasty diseases, myxomatosis and a viral hemorrhagic disease, which means that basically rabbits bleed to death very, very quickly. Wow. And these are both preventable by vaccination. So certainly we always want to start our vaccinations as young as possible. You can even start them at 6 weeks of age. And then it's usually every 9 months or every year following on from that to keep the levels of protection up. So vaccinations are important, and also neutering. Female rabbits, if they're left entire, almost invariably will get a cancer of the uterus. And again, we want to try and prevent that as a problem. And the best way to do it is to have them neutered.
What about the diet? Now, you may think my little boy will probably say, oh yeah, if it's a rabbit, it can have a carrot and just eat carrots. It's not. It's got to have a good diet, hasn't it?
Occasional carrots are fine, but the key thing with rabbits is they're designed to live on grass. Their teeth are continually growing, and if they don't have a lot of chewing, then their teeth will overgrow. And when they overgrow, they grow into the mouth and start cutting the tongue and the cheeks, but also the roots grow backwards, and then we end up with abscesses in the jaw, and this can be a real problem. Mm. So one of the biggest messages that we try and get across to any rabbit owner, any family taking on rabbits, is the hay diet. So basically they live on grass or hay, occasional treats of a bit of concentrate, but regarding it almost as a treat rather than being the staple diet. And rabbits will do brilliantly on that. And it also helps to avoid other problems because it means that they've got a lot of fibre in their diet, a lot of roughage, which then helps keep the gut turning over properly. And it helps avoid, always a rather tricky subject to talk about, but it avoids poo getting stuck onto their backsides. And that's one of the big issues that we can have.
This is really doing a bit of myth busting, especially for me, having not had a rabbit before, because you can just get stuck in these, you know, rabbits have this or rabbits live in a hutch, or it's really, really interesting. I noticed as well, just before we started on air, you mentioned about flies being a big problem for rabbits as well.
Yeah, I mean, we've got the cold weather at the moment, but, you know, it will be turning around. I promise it will. Summer will come.
And hopefully.
And when it finally does, that's when we start to see, you know, a bigger fly problem. And as I mentioned about poo getting stuck around rabbits' backsides, this is an attractive place for flies to lay their eggs. Then the eggs hatch out and become little maggots, and the maggots then start to feed. And they feed not only on the poo, but they can actually feed on the rabbits as well, which is rather horrible and gross, and it can be fatal as far as our rabbits are concerned. So keeping them good and clean, having a good diet, inspecting them regularly, changing the bedding in the hutch, in the living quarters in where they're staying, you know, keeping everything nice and clean is vitally important. And we've also got some products in the vet hospital that actually help keep flies away as well.
Which would be really useful, because it just sounds, I've heard of that experience from somebody at work who's had to deal with that, and it just sounds horrendous for the rabbit.
It's heartbreaking because these rabbits, you know, rabbits are great pets. They have great characters, and they become very much part of our family. And having a rabbit go through this painful and unpleasant experience is nothing that any of us want to go through.
Definitely. Now, handling, here's something. I have handled a few rabbits, and they do kind of try and escape sometimes. What's your tips on handling? What should we be doing? How much handling should we be doing?
Generally, keep them on the floor, stroke and pet them, and certainly with young kids, rather than having kids picking them up, because a rabbit can then struggle, and they've got very, very powerful back legs. And if they kick out with their back legs, you know, naturally, a child will be scratched and will then drop the rabbit, and their legs break very, very easily. So the best thing to do is to actually let our rabbits play with us on the floor. So we're sitting on the floor, and our rabbits can then climb over us, and we can stroke and pet them. Because certainly, yes, we want our rabbits to be socialised. We enjoy that interaction. They enjoy the interaction as well, but avoiding danger and avoiding any broken bones.
What would be your, say, if somebody's listening now thinking, actually, I think I'm going to get a rabbit, what would be your number one top tip for somebody who's thinking of owning a rabbit?
Well, James, I guess our number one top tip will be to go and see the vet and have a conversation and discuss the ways of caring. We have lots of leaflets and lots of resources for information, but I think that's always the key point, and discuss problems with that. I guess one of the other myths that we haven't talked about is this idea of having rabbits just kept on their own. They are social animals. They need the social interaction. And whilst we can do a lot with that, they want to be kept as a pair. And obviously, if we keep them as a pair, rabbits will do what rabbits will do, and we'll end up with many, many rabbits. So again, that comes back to our idea about neutering as well.
Well, some great tips there, Bob. So if people are wanting to get in touch with the vet hospital, come and speak to you about perhaps getting a rabbit or any other pet, how do they do that?
Best way to get in touch is to call us on 01423 561 414. As we're the only veterinary hospital in the local area, it means that we have someone on the premises 24 hours a day. So our nurses are there looking after inpatients, looking after sick pets, but they're also there to answer your calls 24 hours a day. And you can also contact us via our website, which is www.vethospital.com.
The Vet Hospital on Stray Living. Amelia Powland's family on Stray Living.
So, Brian, it is absolutely fantastic to meet you. You are a man with an interesting background. So now funeral director, but tell us what got you to this point. Not this point of being sat here having a cup of tea with me this afternoon, but what got you to this point? You've had quite an interesting career and a previous life before becoming a funeral director.
Well, I mean, I left school when I was 18 and I worked actually in Ramsbottoms in Skipton. It was an old-fashioned photographic and hi-fi shop. So I cut my teeth in my early teens working in retail, and I was trained as like an assistant cafe manager. And it was in them days where you did everything. So not only did you polish the cameras, we used to sell little LPs, you know, the old discs. And also, I was just thinking, reminiscing, that people used to come in and have the photographs developed. Because I saw recently, it said, do you remember when you had to go to Kodak and get your photos developed? Thinking,
I used to love that, putting photos in an album and everything. Now they're just on you. It's so boring. They're on your phone. And then a message comes up and says you're about to run out of storage. And you're like, which one shall I delete and everything. So eventually, you joined the police, and you were quite senior in the police force, weren't you?
Well, I did. It were in those times when my mum couldn't afford to keep us. We were a single family. And so I was looking for an income. I went to work at Peter Black in Keighley for a while because the wage was three times more than what I was getting at Skipton. But I'd always had an inkling for the police, and I wondered whether I were tall enough, because I'm 5'8" and a bit with my boots on. And yet to be tall then, and I wore glasses, so I thought I'm probably going to be excluded. Anyway, I applied and I got accepted, and I joined in 1980. And I've been very grateful for the career that I've had. It's always been people focused, and that's the problem when you retire. It's like a ministry. It's like nursing staff. They say it's a vocation, and the fire service, the ambulance service, the police service, they are a vocation. And certainly when I joined, you were on a really low wage. I remember him saying to me, are you sure you're not joining for the wage, lad? And I said, actually, I'm taking a £500 a year pay cut to join you, which was a huge amount of money in 1980. I think I were more youthful and impetuous than we sense, really. But anyway, I joined the police, and then I worked my way through. And my work eventually, as I grew through the ranks, took me to India and Pakistan, working with communities. I were based a lot in Bradford and places like that, worked over in Wakefield, came across to Leeds. And interestingly enough, I have a false hip now, because I got run down when I were a young copper, carried on the bonnet of a car. When I got shook off the car bonnet, it was like one of those Carry On films, because I were hanging onto the windscreen wipers and he turned them on.
More Tom and Jerry.
Anyway, I ended up with a false hip much later in later life, because you don't know when you're in your 20s what damage is being caused. And it's the same with my teeth. I have two or three plastic teeth. And of all wherever I've worked, I got the most amount of beatings when I were in my hometown of Keighley. And if we strayed towards Cross Hills and Skipton to help them out when there were a fight, usually an auction mart day.
Well, let's talk about where we are now. So clearly, you see a lot of things in the police. So clearly, that's pushed you on after retirement to become a funeral director here. And just tell us then of some of your own personal cultures and beliefs for the kind of support you want to give to people as a funeral director.
Well, you know, I've been a church organist for well over 35 years and a practicing Christian. And that's not means that I'm judgmental to people who are not Christian. It means that I have a set of values, and I've been around people, bereaved people so much, and particularly in the police. Sad to say, I've had to support so many families through so much. So this is what I was saying to you earlier on. It's about a vocation and service. And when I retired, once you've had the honeymoon period of not having to go to work, it's what is there? And I've always had a belief that people at their darkest hour of their despair, they turn to trusted family names. So if you've always gone to Charlie Farley's funeral care, that's appropriate. That's really good, because it's a name that you trust. But if you're not sure, and the other thing that's not spoken about is the cost of things. So therefore, I was very passionate to be able to provide people in my hometown, and I include like Sutton and Skipton where I grew up, so that's where my businesses are, I feel I wanted to give something back, if that sounds not too trite. It's a genuine belief I have that I think in your darkest hour of despair, when you turn to someone for help, you need the best possible care, and the cost is not always known. It's an unspoken thing that's not spoken about until you're given an invoice or an estimate, and you go, how much? But then you're committed, and you think, well, Auntie Frieda, she needs the best. We'll worry about where we're going to get the money for the funeral later. But in my experience over the years, that's been an equal worry. So some people's answer to that would be, get a funeral plan, offset the cost. That's what you need. The answer isn't no. You need, in this day and age, especially in these austere times, you need a very transparent approach where you can look in a shop window, go on the Tinter web, when nobody's looking over your shoulder, and think, oh, that's how much. So that's what I try to do now. I've opened shops with the price in the window. It would be fair to say some people not in the business are not comfortable with the fact that there's a price available, but I would say you're being transparent, you're being honest, you're giving people a choice, and you're giving people an opportunity in a non-threatening way to see how much this might cost. And you know, the thing is, if people say, no, I want all the bells and whistles, it's got to be everything, that's a choice. But if you want the most simple, modest, dignified send-off you can, you should be able to pay for that at a price without having everything. Does that make sense? So I suppose, like, the anecdote would be, Auntie Frieda, I have an Auntie Frieda, by the way, God rest her soul, so I apologise to anybody who's called Frieda. But Auntie Frieda, she wasn't religious, she doesn't want a fuss. If somebody could bring her into their care, put her in a nice little casket, see us at the crematorium, somebody say a few words, somebody play some music, not a fuss. That's what you might call a very simple, dignified process. The average price of that on the market can be around £3,500, but in reality, you should be looking at £1,700 to £1,800. They talk a lot about what disbursements are. Disbursements are things that are paid to a third party. So a third party, for example, is a cremation fee. So in Bradford, the cremation fee is £654. In Skipton, it's £630. In Harrogate, it's well over £700. It's towards £780, and the same in Leeds. So dependent on what the local authority set their cremation costs are, that's a huge part of the bill you don't even realise is looming if you didn't know it were there. Mm. And then sometimes where the coroner's not involved, medical referees are required. It's a fact of law that two doctors independent of each other must agree the cause of death. Specifically when it's a cremation, because there's no follow-up if someone in a year's time was to say Auntie Frieda were poisoned. So, but that's another £164 on the bill. So you can see, dependent on where you live, and without getting into the argument of postcode lotteries, you know, like you do with insurance, you can be facing a bill of £800 to £900 before you start.
Amelia Powland's family on Stray Living.
It's your home, your family, your life.
Welcome to Stray Living.
With the Houseman Harrogate, the expert property handyman, maintenance and refurbishment service.
Okay, so you can download all of this as a new free podcast at strayfm.com. See if you can say this after all that Prosecco. Just click on specialist shows. See if you can say it. Go on. See if you,
no!
See, say strayfm.com specialist shows.
Strayfm.com specialist shows. Whatever.
So it's been a great show tonight. So just before I tell you what you've missed, we have to do. We've met somebody very, very special today to do with gardening in Harrogate.
Oh, I swear to God,
the
main man, the top man, Mr. Nick Smith. We met him earlier today. What a legend. He brings my favourite show to Harrogate. Mm. What a phenomenal guy. Great team. So big up for Nick Smith.
So he's the top man from the Harrogate Flower Show, and he's obviously going to be on this show with us very soon. So keep listening for that over the next few weeks. Back next Friday at 7. On the podcast then, we've got Sally on irises, on your gardening jobs for the weekend. Also, the story of how Sally killed her boss's rabbit,
no.
Which links into rabbit care with the vet hospital. And also, we met Brian from Melia Powell Family Funeral Care.
Fascinating.
He is a top man. He is, do you know what? Brian FM.
Brian FM, that's a good idea.
I'm punting that. Yeah, Brian's the top man. And it was great to have him on the show as well. You can hear it all again at strayfm.com.
Stray Living with the Houseman Harrogate. The expert property handyman maintenance and refurbishment service.